Hello, this is Chris with the Bloomington Pentagraph for Monday, April 14th. We'll begin today's reading on the front page. Corn is up, soybeans down. Economists say trends reflect supply and outlook. Illinois farmers are expected to plant more corn and fewer soybeans this year, part of national trends reflected in a recent federal report. Agriculture economists say that a slightly more optimistic economic outlook for corn and a large stock of soybeans likely contributed to results of the U.S. Department of Agriculture's most recent prospective plantings report. The report, released March 31st, estimated corn planted area for this year at 95.3 million acres, up 5% or 4.73 million acres from last year. It projected that soybean area this year will be 83.5 million acres, down 4%. This decline was largely across all major soybean growing areas in the U.S., with 23 of the 29 states featured in the report showing down or unchanged soybean acreage. In Illinois, farmers are projected to plant 11.1 million acres of corn, up from 10.8 million last year. Neighboring Missouri and Iowa were estimated at 3.8 million and 13.5 million corn acres, respectively, up from 3.45 million and 12 million last year. On soybeans, the USDA projected 10.5 million acres in Illinois, down from 10 million acres last year. It estimated 5.7 million acres of soybeans in Missouri, down from 5.9 million last year, and 9.6 million acres in Iowa, down from 10 million last year. Across the U.S., total wheat planted area for 2025 would be down 2% at 45 million acres, according to the USDA estimate. If that proves accurate, it would be the second lowest total wheat planted area since records began in 1919. Purdue University ag economist Michael Langmire said a climb in corn acres was largely expected before the report. "I was not real surprised that corn acres were as high as they were," he said. He said pre-report estimates for corn area were about 94 million acres, and the report came in slightly above that. "That's why the markets didn't move that much. Corn supplies are relatively small compared to the current large stockpile of soybeans, which is one reason why farmers are looking to move to more corn acreage this year. Soybean supplies are quite a bit higher," Langmire said, later adding, "even though soybean acreage reduced by 4 million acres, we've got so many soybeans out there." Also, while export trends and possible tariffs could impact several sectors of agriculture, Langmire said soybeans in particular are heavily dependent on exports for demand. "If you start thinking about tariffs, what's the crop you think of?" he said. "Soybeans." Farm Bureau economist Betty Resnick said markets had largely priced in an expected increase in corn acres before the report. "We were expecting big corn acres overall," she said. "It was a little bit higher than most were expecting, but it didn't cause too many waves." She said corn acres were down in 2024, so some of this year's increase is replacing the downturn of last year. U.S. farmers planted 94 million acres of corn in 2023 and 90 million acres of corn in 2024, with the USDA estimating 95 million acres of corn will be planted this year. The modern high watermark for U.S. corn acreage was 2012, when farmers planted 96.4 million acres of corn. That was the highest total in the U.S. since 1937. The soybean acreage in the report, like corn, looks similar to 2023 levels. In 2023, U.S. farmers planted 83 million acres of soybeans and then 87 million in 2024, before this year's estimate of 83 million acres. Resnick said soybeans see more of their crop directly reported, although corn is exported as other goods like livestock feed or ethanol, so it could see some impact from export disruptions as well. As planting season arrives, farmers find themselves dealing with unknowns about the future of foreign trade and use of biofuels. "There's just so much uncertainty right now. I think we're looking at continued lower commodity prices." Resnick said farmers can make some adjustments to their planting intentions, although most buy inputs well in advance and have ongoing crop rotations they like to continue. Farmers are not gardeners. They can't just change what they plant on a dime. Missing World War II soldier laid to rest at last. Bloomington man's family kept memory alive from Bloomington. Missing for over 80 years, a Bloomington Army private has been laid to a long-delayed rest at Park Hill Cemetery. "It's a miracle," said Margie Dillo, remarking on the incredible circumstances that led her uncle, U.S. Army Private Robert Bryant, to be buried with full military honors on Saturday at the cemetery, 1105 South Morse Avenue in Bloomington. Although they never met him, Dillo and her sister Diane Wheat said they heard stories of their Uncle Bob from their parents. Their father, Dean Bryant, is buried in the same plot where Bryant remains were laid to rest on Saturday. "We always knew that he was a hero," Dillo said of her uncle. Robert Bryant was born February 20, 1920, in Sedalia, Missouri. He moved in 1930 to Bloomington, where he lived until he enlisted in the military on December 7, 1939. The private was a member of the United States Army Rangers, and with the 4th Ranger Battalion, nicknamed Darby's Rangers, he was one of approximately 70 Rangers in his company who landed on beaches near Salerno, Italy, along with the remainder of the Allied invasion force during Operation Avalanche. On September 23, 1943, Bryant was reported missing in action after a four-man patrol searched for the wounded Rangers while they were west of Padre, Italy, which was deep in enemy territory. 2 days later, he was reported killed in action, and in 1949, his remains were declared non-recoverable by the War Department. But on September 23, 2024, after having been in contact with the Pentagon for about 5 years, Wheat received a call that her uncle's remains had been identified through DNA analysis. She said, "We found him 81 years after he went missing to the exact date." Ever since he was reported missing, Bryant's name has been on the walls of the missing at Sicily Rome American Cemetery, an ABMC site in Nettuno, Italy. Now a rosette will be placed next to his name to show he has been accounted for, Bloomington Mayor Makoma Makwene said during Saturday's cemetery ceremony. Mayor-elect Dan Brady also made remarks, saying the city of Bloomington would recognize and honor Bryant with the highest respect. John Bryant, nephew of the fallen soldier, said his father, Dwayne Bryant, was the youngest of the family's 7 siblings. He was only 13 years old when his elder brother, Robert, was reported missing. However, Robert Bryant's memory remained alive. Dwayne Bryant still told stories of his brother, according to his son. He wrote letters to Robert Bryant and was able to remember him enough to tell his children of the private's athleticism and courage with fighting in the war. "This is what our grandparents wanted," John Bryant said of Saturday's burial. "It took 81 years, but it's finally happening." "It's amazing, the support and the outpouring of affection," said Jim Bryant, Wheat and Dillo's brother, of the community response to their fallen uncle's return. Jim Bryant said he was glad the missing uncle will be sharing a plot with his father, but he thought it was a shame it couldn't happen years ago. "We're all grateful, and we know our fathers would be very happy," said Mary Bryant, daughter of James Bryant, who was Robert Bryant's older brother. She praised the assistance of Rolling Thunder, a national organization with 90 chapters across the U.S., dedicated to remembering prisoners of war and service members missing in action and raising awareness of veterans' issues. "It just brings tears and joy. It's so heartwarming. I love the Rolling Thunder. I think that is so neat. I'm sure we're going to cry, Mary Bryant told the Pentagraph before the ceremony. At the end of the burial service, the Army Rangers performed the Once an Eagle ceremony, in which men took roll call. Private Robert Bryant, a man called. When there was no answer, a ranger chimed in, Private Robert Bryant, who was once an Eagle, has now been transferred to a higher headquarter. Robert Bryant was awarded the Bronze Star, Purple Heart, American Campaign Medal, European African Middle East Campaign Medal with Arrowhead, and two Bronze Stars, World War II Victory Medal, American Defense Service Medal, the Presidential Unit Citation for 4th Ranger Battalion, Combat Infantry Badge, and the Ranger Tab. There are still 80,000 soldiers that have not returned home. Today, with Private Bryant, he has finally been returned home, said David Skinner, a representative of Rolling Thunder. Skinner said he is happy to bring closure to the family after so many years. It's a family member, an empty chair at their table. Also on the front page, Russian missiles kill 34 civilians. Palm Sunday attack hits heart of Sumy, from the Ukraine. Russian missiles struck the heart of the Ukrainian city of Sumy as people gathered to celebrate Palm Sunday, killing at least 34 people in the second large-scale attack to claim civilian lives in just over a week. The two ballistic missiles hit around 10:15 a.m. Images from the scene showed lines of black body bags on the side of the road, while more bodies were seen wrapped in foil blankets among the debris. Video footage also showed fire crews fighting to extinguish the shells of burned-out cars among the rubble from damaged buildings. The dead included two children, the State Emergency Service of Ukraine said in a statement. A further 117 people were wounded, including 15 children. Only filthy scum can act like this, taking the lives of ordinary people, Ukrainian President Zelensky said. In a statement on social media, he said the first strike hit buildings belonging to a city university, while the second exploded above street level. The head of the Ukrainian president's office, Andrei Yermak, said the strike also used cluster munitions in an attempt to kill as many people as possible. The Associated Press was unable to verify the claim. The attack on Sumy followed a deadly April 4th missile strike on Zelensky's hometown of Kyiv that killed some 20 people, including 9 children. Zelensky called for a global response to the attack. Talks have never stopped ballistic missiles and aerial bombs. What's needed is an attitude toward Russia that a terrorist deserves. Other world leaders also condemned the attack, with French President Macron saying that it undermined Washington-led peace talks between the two sides. Everyone knows this war was initiated by Russia alone, and today it is clear that Russia alone chooses to continue it, with blatant disregard for human lives, international law, and the diplomatic efforts of Trump, he wrote in a statement. Elsewhere in Ukraine, two women, ages 62 and 68, and a 48-year-old man were killed in Russian attacks on the Kherson region. Another person was killed during Russian shelling on Ukraine's Donetsk region. The mayor of the Ukrainian city of Kharkiv said a Russian strike hit one of the city's kindergartens, shattering windows and damaging the building's facade. No casualties were reported. The strikes come a day after Russian and Ukraine senior diplomats accused each other of violating a tentative U.S. brokered deal to pause strikes on energy infrastructure, underscoring the challenges of negotiating an end to the three-year war. The two countries' foreign ministers spoke at separate events at the annual diplomacy forum a day after U.S. envoy Steve Witkoff met with Putin to discuss peace prospects. The Ukrainians have been attacking us from the very beginning, every passing day, maybe with two or three exceptions, said the Russian foreign minister, adding that Moscow would provide the U.S., Turkey, and international bodies with a list of Kyiv's attacks during the past 3 weeks. His Ukrainian counterpart contested that claim, saying Saturday that Russia had launched almost 70 missiles, over 2,000 exploding drones, and more than 6,000 guided aerial bombs at Ukraine, mostly at civilians, since agreeing to the limited pause on strikes. Russian forces hold the advantage in Ukraine, and Kyiv has warned that Moscow is planning a fresh spring offensive to ramp up pressure on its foe and improve its negotiating position. Ukraine has endorsed a broader U.S. ceasefire proposal, but Russia has effectively blocked it by imposing far-reaching conditions. European governments have accused Putin of dragging his feet. Retired Lieutenant General Kellogg, Trump's special envoy to Ukraine and Russia, said the Sumy attack crossed any line of decency and that the White House remained committed to ending the conflict. There are scores of civilian dead and wounded. As a former military leader, I understand targeting, and this is wrong. U.S. Secretary of State Rubio called the attack horrifying and said it offered a tragic reminder of why the administration was trying to end the war in favor of a just and durable peace. Police reform measure advances. Massey's death prompts push for change. From Springfield. The Sangamon County Sheriff's Office came under intense scrutiny after an unarmed black woman was shot and killed by a deputy in her Springfield home in July 2024. The deputy charged with her murder, Sean Grayson, had a troubled employment record at other Central Illinois police agencies, despite a former supervisor once asking Grayson, "How are you still employed?" He was hired by Sangamon County in May 2023, only to have his career end 14 months later when he shot and killed 36-year-old Sonia Massey in her home. The Illinois Senate advanced a pair of bills this week designed to address the community's concerns about the tragedy and how it was handled. After that murder occurred, a lot of things came out with regard to the way that deputy was hired, and also a lot of questionable activities that were in his background that Sangamon County was not aware of and did not have privy to before an offer of employment. Grayson, who is white, shot and killed Massey inside her house early on the morning of July 6th. Body camera video shows Grayson and another deputy responding to a report of a prowler at her home. They didn't find signs of anyone outside. The situation went south after Massey asked the deputies if she could remove a pot of boiling water from the stove. Massey, who had a history of mental health episodes, told the deputies, "I rebuke you in the name of Jesus," and Grayson threatened to shoot Massey in the face. He then fired, striking Massey, and told other deputies responding to the shooting he feared Massey was going to throw the water at him. Grayson was charged with first-degree murder and is awaiting trial as the Illinois Supreme Court weighs a request from his attorney to grant him pretrial release. A separate court ruling earlier this week moved the trial out of Sangamon County to Peoria County. The Senate advanced legislation Wednesday to reform hiring at police agencies. Senate Bill 1953, sponsored by Turner, was unanimously approved in the state. The bill would require law enforcement agencies to review all aspects of a person's background and employment before offering a position as an officer, including physical and psychological fitness for duty exams, work performance records, investigations involving the applicant, and any prior arrests or criminal convictions. When it comes to hiring police officers, we want to ensure we have the most qualified people. Grayson was hired by Sangamon County despite troubles at past police agencies and two drunken driving convictions, a Capital News Illinois investigation found. In one instance, while working for Logan County, Grayson was told he needed extensive training after not listening to a supervisor's orders to terminate a police chase. But when Grayson was hired by Sangamon County, the investigations in Logan County ended. Grayson also served short stints at other Central Illinois policy agencies, including Auburn, where the police chief complained Grayson was often too aggressive about drug busts and bragged about them on social media. The bill also would require all counties with more than 75,000 people to create a sheriff's merit board. Current state law only requires Cook County to have an independent board overseeing disciplinary matters. A Sangamon County commission created after Macy's death also recommended giving voters power to recall countywide elected officials. Sangamon County Sheriff Jack Campbell faced intense calls to resign after Macy's death. After initially resisting them, he retired at the end of August 2024. The Senate voted 35 to 19 Thursday to approve Senate Bill 1954, which would allow Sangamon County to present a referendum to voters in 2026, asking them to create a recall mechanism for certain countywide elected officials, such as the sheriff. County treasurers, regional superintendents, and district elected officials, such as county board members, could not be recalled under the bill. I believe there is widespread support on the county board to put the question of recall before the voters of Sangamon County. Some Republican senators said the bill should expand beyond Sangamon County. I think every elected official in the state of Illinois should be liable to recall by their constituents if they're not doing their job properly. Only Cook County voters currently can recall officials. The bills now await consideration in the House. Also from Springfield, prison release reform bill advances. Bill prompted by 2024 murder of a Chicago boy. State lawmakers have advanced a bill that would reform the Prisoner Review Board, aiming to protect victims and increase transparency about prisoner releases following years of controversy surrounding the board's decisions. Championed by Senate President Don Harmon, Senate Bill 19 would give victims the ability to file victim impact statements ahead of hearings, provide them with additional notice when their offender is granted early release, and allow them to seek an order of protection against an offender who is incarcerated. The bill passed the Illinois Senate on a 33-22 vote on Thursday, with some Democrats opposing the legislation. It would also create the Office of the Director of Victim and Witness Services, which would ensure the board complies with victims' rights and mandates victims are provided with contact information for the State Victim Assistance Hotline. The reforms come after Crosetti Brand allegedly murdered an 11-year-old Chicago boy in 2024. That February, the board voted to release Brand, finding there was not enough evidence he had violated his conditions of release. His ex-girlfriend, Latricia Smith, was denied an emergency order of protection by Cook County judge while Brand was imprisoned at Stateville in Crest Hill. A day after he was released, authorities say, Brand attacked Smith and murdered her 11-year-old son, Jaden Perkins, who attempted to protect his mother. The murder caused two PRB members, including the board chair, to resign. Brand's history of domestic violence against women prompted both advocates and lawmakers to call for stricter review of prisoners' backgrounds before their release. He has pleaded not guilty and is awaiting trial while held in Lawrence Correctional Center in southeast Illinois. During last year's legislative session, Representative Cassidy championed a PRB reform bill that had bipartisan support but was never called for a vote in the House on the final day of session. That bill would have made changes that included requiring the board to notify victims within 24 hours if an offender whom they had an order of protection against was released early. In a news conference held the day after the session ended, Governor Pritzker expressed his concerns with the parts of the bill regarding the live stream of certain PRB meetings and the lack of funding for other requirements. Harmon described this year's reform bill as a similar to but improved upon version of Cassidy's bill that expands the rights of victims to be heard and to be notified. The bill would change qualifications for board members, requiring 7 out of the 15 board members to have at least 5 years of experience as a law enforcement officer, parole officer, prosecutor, criminal defense attorney, or judge. It would also change the term limits of any new board members elected from 6 to 8 years, something Harmon said would allow board members to be less concerned about their reappointment and more focused on making good decisions. Senator Steve McClure voiced his disagreement on the Senate floor Thursday. He asked Harmon how he thought it was a great idea to lengthen terms for members who he said are vetted by the governor. The Senate can't pass a law by itself. The bill before us, I believe, will be well received and passed by the House and signed by the governor, Harmon said in response. It is the best bill we are able to pass into law at the present time. Republicans have spent years criticizing Pritzker's appointments to the board following several controversial nominations in recent years. The bill now awaits action in the House. And from Bloomington, registered dietitian Jenna Smith was named the recipient of the 2025 McLean County Public Health Award. Smith is a nutrition and wellness educator for the University of Illinois Extension. She was presented the award during a ceremony at the McLean County Health Department on Wednesday, April 9th. The Public Health Award was created by the McLean County Board of Health and the McLean County Health Department. The award recognizes one county resident each year who helps further public health principles and practices by providing services in the county. The contribution can be professional or occupational, as a volunteer, or in a paid capacity. Award criteria included public health impact, collaboration, community leadership, and contribution to health promotion. We received several nominations for the award this year. The selection committee had a difficult time choosing one winner from all the very deserving candidates. Jenna Smith has clearly demonstrated all these principles and more. Her hard work has helped to further our mission of protecting and promoting health. Smith has been an advocate for local residents who wish to learn more about the cottage food industry, which allows individuals in Illinois to operate home-based business models to produce and sell certain low-risk food products directly to customers, but not for resale. This allows entrepreneurs to learn about food safety practices, test their products, and build a customer base before expanding to a commercial kitchen. Smith has also worked with Illinois Wesleyan University's Small Business Development Center to help prospective food business owners. She developed the Feeding My Baby from Cradle to Table website to help parents and caretakers to ensure optimal growth and development. She serves on the Illinois Food Safety Advisory Committee and the North Central Region Safety Work Group as well. Jenna helped to diversify McLean County's cottage food industry. She worked with translators, ensuring ESL participants fully comprehend food safety practices. She has made significant contributions to the Illinois State Statute for Cottage Food and even helped develop Illinois' cottage food guidelines for safe food production and sale. Additionally, Smith instructs the Centers for Disease Control's Diabetes Prevention Program, a year-long program that helps people who are pre-diabetic to avoid or delay the onset of type 2 diabetes. Smith has positively motivated in McLean County to make healthier lifestyle changes, including eating healthier food, getting more active, losing weight, lowering their A1C levels, and other positive health outcomes. And from the Vatican, a convalescing Pope Francis greeted the crowd in St. Peter's Square on Palm Sunday, wishing more than 20,000 faithful a happy Palm Sunday and a happy Holy Week, and yet another reassuring sign of his recovery from a life-threatening battle with double pneumonia. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Bloomington Pentagraph for Monday, April 14th. Please stay tuned.